Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Christopher Boozy. You know, he's a Start Me Up favorite. He's been predicting elections for years now. He's got a brand new electoral map. He's predicting Florida will flip. He thinks Ohio and Iowa are in play. This is going to be interesting. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Christopher Boozy. Welcome back to the show, Christopher.
Hey, Kimberly. Thank you. And, you know, thank you for having me. I can't wait to get into it.
Oh, my God. Me too. We're going to talk about so much. Specifically, we're going to talk about your new map. And I haven't talked to you since Kamala Harris has been the candidate because my boyfriend has been monopolizing you. And which I am listening to every show you do with him. And I was listening to I listened to both of your pods when you did your electoral map. So you've done two now, and we are going to talk about your latest map. But before we get into that, I just have to mention your war. And I want you to talk about this a little bit. Your war with, is his name Evan Power? Some Florida GOP dude. And oh my God, it's freaking making me laugh. So can you just like fill us in with that feud? Because it's so funny.
I don't even know how this came about, to be honest with you. I was posting information about Florida, talking about, you know, Florida flipping. And, I guess because the way Twitter's algorithm is, I started seeing some stuff with like Barbie Hardin Hall, I think her name is, out there in Florida. She's running for Congress. And one of the, in her district, one of the notable places is the Villages, where, you know, you got these folks, these older folks out there who are, you know, they used to be Trump supporters and now they're coming out heavily for VP Harris. Mm-hmm. So I actually saw the two of them going back and forth. And I ended up replying to him with something. And that now it's just been like an ongoing feud type of thing for like 2 weeks. His name is Evan Power. He is the GOP chairman out there in Florida. Mm-hmm. And he seems like he's going through some things. It seems like he's crashing out on Twitter.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, so wait, let me go back to, Oh, okay. There it was. I don't think it was Evan. It was this other guy who you were talking to today. And but I believe it's Evan and whoever this other guy is talking about.
Eric. The other guy's name's Eric.
Eric. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're promoting the idea that there is a rise in Republican registrations, and that is for them showing them that the Republicans are going to win. And it appears to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of these, or at least the assumption is, or that, I don't know, that Republicans are registering so that they can vote for Kamala. Am I correct on this?
Well, no. So that appears to be a myth.
Okay.
That's been going around. But what is really happening here is this. Okay, so really quickly with this, because I think it's really important folks to understand what's going on in Florida. So they passed this law. I don't even remember when this law was passed, but it was within the last few years under DeSantis, where if you did not participate in two general elections, you get knocked down to inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, inactive does not mean you cannot vote. It just means that you're put on the inactive list. You can go down to your polling place and they will, make you active again, or if you, request a mail-in ballot or whatever the case may be. Now, if you miss four consecutive general elections, the general elections, if I'm not mistaken, is four, you're then purged.
Wow.
So what Evan is doing and what a lot of these other folks are doing is they're showing you, hey, look, we have this huge registration advantage. But what it really is the list of of active voters.
Right.
But now here's the other part to this. And I think this is also very important for folks to understand. This registration, so let's just pretend for a second that they actually did have a million plus registration advantage to Democrats. Independents, their NPA, non-party affiliate or whatever, affiliated or whatever it is, NPA makes up one third basically of the voters there in Florida. So when you combine Democrats with independents, they outnumber Republicans. And we now see independents are breaking heavily for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So still, there's this, even with that advantage, if there was a, reasonable turnout in November, better than 2020, and I believe there will be, and then you have NPAs breaking for Democrats, and you have a significant number of Republicans deciding they're not going to vote for Trump, and there's proof of this. Harris flips Florida.
Yeah.
So this thing that they're doing here with the registration numbers, I do believe he's doing this to dissuade folks from, sending money to Florida, dissuade folks from going out and volunteering because to make it look like it's a lost cause.
Right. Wow. All right. Well, let's get into the map, because I did listen to you on Sunday and you specifically said, look, you care about this election and you recognize that if you're saying Florida is in play or Florida is flippable, that, people are going to send money to that, where if you really didn't believe it, you would not say that, so they could send money to other states that were literally more, able to flip or whatever. So your whole point here is that you genuinely believe and see evidence that it will flip. Now, it is I'm listening to when you were on my boyfriend's podcast, when he stole you away from me, you talked about how you don't necessarily go by the polls, but we do have some polling that shows her creeping up, at least in the national poll. So can you talk about, you did it on his show, but I want you to do it on my show. Just tell us, what you're gauging and how you're determining this.
Yeah, I mean, once again, good question. Okay, so I don't. I stay away from the polls because I think the polls are useless, especially in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, polling it's been notoriously bad. So what I'm looking at is, I use sentiment analysis in terms of, what are people talking about? How do you feel about the candidates? I'm looking at the raw numbers. how have the independents been voting lately? How, you know, are Democrats fired up in terms of enthusiasm? What does it look like with Republicans? Are they staying home? Are they coming out? And when they do come out, how are they voting? Are they voting in line with how they typically vote, or are they breaking away? So what I mean by that, so if there's a ballot initiative, like with, you know, abortion, mm-hmm. are they voting with Democrats on that, or are they, you know, staying, you know, conservative or whatever, and voting with that side there? Mm-hmm. I look at what's happening on the ground. You know, what's happening there? You know, are we seeing folks volunteer, you know, an increase in people volunteering? You know, are we seeing an increase in registration, voter registration? I mean, just a whole plethora of things I'm looking at. I'm trying to get a holistic view of what's going on in the country. Mm-hmm. Because back in 2016, people focused so much on the polls, where we had people on the ground in places like Pennsylvania, places like Michigan, where they were saying, hey, there's something happening on the ground here, and you guys need to come down and pay attention, because this is not looking good. Mm-hmm. And the campaigns ignored it, and the analysts ignored it, and they were right. Mm-hmm. So when I started doing this after 2016, I knew right away that if I was going to be successful at doing this and be able to give these accurate forecasts, or possibly at least close to, you know, being as accurate as possible, that I can't pay attention to the polls, and I have to look at other things besides the polls.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, and so what is telling you that Florida's going to flip?
Good question. So, and I know, and I should have segued into that. So with Florida, and Nikki Fried said it better than I ever could. There's a perfect storm happening, and I've actually used this term a lot with the, you know, with the general election in terms of the overall country. So in Florida, you have the ballot initiatives, right? So that's the first one. You have abortion on the ballot, and you have weed on the ballot. So you're going to see higher than normal turnout. Secondly, you have, you know, I hate to use this term, but a hatred now, a dislike mm-hmm. of Rick Scott mm-hmm. and DeSantis for a lot of different reasons. You know, we see with in Florida with the higher insurance, you know, the culture wars, just all the craziness that's going on in Florida. So they're both disliked. And then put Trump in there as well. There are folks in Florida who's had enough, you know, of Trump. Then you have before, you know, I was telling you I thought Florida was going to flip before VP Harris was at the top of the ticket. But now we have VP Harris at the top of the ticket. And she's bringing something to the table. Unfortunately, Biden did not bring to the table. She's bringing a renewed sense of joy mm-hmm. and enthusiasm. Like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And that's extremely important in trying to flip a state like Florida, because it's not just about going out and voting. It's also about volunteering, phone mm-hmm. banking, canvassing, you know, things like that. And we're seeing, you know, the last number I heard was something like 33,000. It's probably more now. 33,000 wow. folks have registered to vote. I'm so sorry, 32,000 registered to volunteer.
Right.
Sorry, to volunteer. but there have been an increase in voter registration as well. So that's a significant number.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing, and this is one of the key things here, is what is the percentage of Republican voters that are going to say enough is enough? And I'm done. I'm not voting for this guy. Man, I'm not even voting for Rick Scott. So initially, I had said 3 to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I revised that number earlier this week, and I've now changed it to 5 to 10%.
Wow.
Yes, and that's off of his 2020 mm-hmm. support. So it's there. I think I saw Matt Walsh, I think his name is,
mm-hmm.
Earlier today, even talking about how there's something happening here. There's something happening on the, you know, on the ground. I'm seeing a lot of folks who are Republicans saying they're going to support Harris. And this is what I talked about on, you know, on my pod, that I am seeing this realignment that I've never witnessed before, where there's this shift to VP Harris. And this is coming from folks that are quote unquote undecided, but Republicans as well. And it's a significant number.
You know, I have a question because I was fearful, right? That if, and you and I talked about this before the whole switch happened, that, you know, if Biden were to drop out, we just thought, oh my God. I mean, first of all, we thought there would be this chaotic, whether it was a brokered convention or open primaries. And, you know, we knew that it had to be Kamala Harris because she's the one who got the money. She's the one who got the infrastructure. But we were also concerned, are Americans going to vote for her because we are living in this divided racist country? And so obviously what's happened, first thing that happens is we see the Democratic Party like fell in line, fell in the unity line. It immediately she got all the endorsements. She started getting money that first day. She started raising ridiculous about, you know, I mean, like in hours she was raising money. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, we've seen the Democratic Party and Democratic voters all march in lockstep, just like the Republicans usually do, and we're getting behind our candidate. But what I don't understand how, I don't know if it's just the optics of her against this older man who, like, why are Reagan Republicans interested in her now? Why are, you know, people like at the place I just, the, what is it called in Florida? The Villages or whatever mm-hmm. it's called. Why are these older people all of a sudden now saying, oh, I really like her? What is it?
Okay, so first thing, the short answer is I don't know.
I know.
Really, I don't. And this is something that I've been talking about at length with folks because, you know, is it because it was, let's just be honest here, two older men, white
yeah.
men?
Yeah.
And people were just like, okay, whatever, I'm just going to go with, you know, Biden. Is it because she's a black woman and for you know, folks here in America, they sometimes view black women at crucial times as the savior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a thing. And yeah. they're looking at her like, okay, maybe, you know, she can be the savior. Or it could be something where they feel like, you know, I like her messaging. I'm tired of the partisan politics. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something where we disagreed on certain things, but we agreed on the core stuff, like, hey, we're Americans and Russia is bad type of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, seriously. Yeah. I mean, these folks are, you know, just tired of the nonsense. I just don't mean, I've always personally felt like the country, you know, in terms of the right, that they were, you know, nowhere near its mini MAGA as folks wanted to try to make it, you know, like to portray it as. And I just think a lot of these folks were not MAGA.
Mm-hmm.
They were voting Republican because they are Republicans. They saw that Trump, you know, is this con man. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what he is. And they're just like tired of it. They're tired of the nonsense and they just want to go back to normal. This is an assumption. Mm-hmm. I you know, I don't know at the end of the day why this is happening, but it is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really kind of perplexing. I mean, I'll take it, but I just, it's very odd to me. I wish that I would have given Americans the credit for that they deserve for this moment, and we'll see, you know, how it all pans out in November. But I certainly did not have the trust and the belief that this was ever going to happen. So yeah, I'm really grateful that this is happening and I don't fully understand it, but it you know, I obviously, you know, like you said, there was this kind of optic thing when you have these two older white men, and even though Joe Biden, which I will just say this over and over and over again, he to this very day, he's extremely savvy. I think if you had, you know, mental decline, it's really hard to be savvy in mental decline. I think that he's getting older, and I think that he fights against different things, whether it's exhaustion or, you know, that awful fucking debate when he had a cold and he was tired and it looked really bad. But if you listened, if all you did was read the transcripts, he was, again, incredibly intelligent. He answered every question. You know, I mean, looking at what Donald Trump said, but it was all about optics. And Donald Trump just looked stronger and more capable in that debate. I hate saying that, but he did.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, if you're going to look at it through the eyes of somebody who is, you know, either on Trump's side already or not sure what to do, that's how it's going to appear. So, yeah, now we've got this woman, and I mean, she's a prosecutor, and, you know, she's got this history, this resume, life experience of prosecuting men just like Trump, you know, and she's outlined that. And it's just funny to me that the people who have been most successful in taking Trump down are black women. And it just seems to be a pattern. So I'm really hoping that this pattern holds through November.
It's going to hold. It's going to hold. When you have momentum like this, it's hard to it's hard for the opposition to overcome that.
Yeah.
And that's what McCain was facing in 2008.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't break through. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is bigger than 2008.
Yes, 100%. Okay, so I want to ask you, though, because you put your new map, even though the electoral number is the same, you have Democrats, mm-hmm. I don't know what you have Republicans at, but you have Democrats at 349. Mm-hmm. So you say that Ohio and Iowa are in play. Why?
Okay, so like I explained on my pod, right, when I'm doing this, you know, a lot of these analysts and stuff, they're trying to give you what's happening now, and they're using the polls, which are, once again, in my opinion, a lagging indicator.
Mm-hmm.
What I am doing is I am trying to forecast not what's happening today, what's going to be happening, you know, a few weeks from now, a month from now. I'm trying to understand where the electorate is going, not so much of where it's at, but where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So because of this realignment that we're seeing, and because I'm seeing this shift from Trump to VP Harris, I have to say, okay, well, I don't think Ohio and Iowa a month from now is going to be in his column. So that's right now, it's quote unquote a toss up, technically a toss up. But what I'm really saying there is I'm not sure Republicans are going to win this, and I'm not sure Democrats are going to win this. So I'm going to now leave this out for now until I can get more data and understand what this realignment is. I made Texas, I know we're probably going to go there, I made Texas pink.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I think Texas is going to flip?
Right.
But once again, I'm seeing this realignment, and I'm trying to understand what this means, because haven't seen this before. And don't know to what extent, you know, look, in Florida, going back to Florida real quick, I talked about that 33,000 new folks who are, you know, registered to help the campaign. 3% or so of those folks identify as Republicans. Okay, 3% of these folks that identify as Republicans registered to volunteer for her and go out and do whatever it is they're going to be doing. In my opinion, that's significant. It's something that folks are not really talking about, and they're just assuming that people are just going into this election like it was back in 2020. It's
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-mm.
It's not that at all. If we're going to make a comparison, then we have to make a comparison to 2008. But I don't even think it's 2008. It's its own unique thing. And I just think we're going to all be surprised on election night. I think this election is going to surprise us.
Hey, real quick, this is Kimberly, you know, the host of the show you're listening to right now. Are you my patron? If you're not, just visit patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see a bunch of tiers. You can choose one and be my patron today. Thank you in advance. I want to ask you, the last time you were on, now, this was about Biden, but you had said, and I'm assuming the same theory holds, that if, whether it's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, if they're both only slightly ahead during the day in Florida, that's good news for Harris, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I still believe it's still the same. So here's the reason why for your listeners when it comes to Florida. 2020 was the first time since, was it 1992, was the first time a president was elected from either party without Florida. So it's the first time since, 1990. So the point here
mm-hmm.
is that typically when you win the presidency, Florida comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, because Florida counts their votes so I mean, they've learned their lesson and they know how to count votes. And I know a lot of folks dislike Florida for a lot of different things, a lot of different reasons. But I promise you, to your listeners, they know how to count votes, and they count votes quickly.
Right.
So we will know early on where this election is going. Now, I will say, yes. So I will say again to your listeners, it does not mean for example, if she does not flip Florida, and I am wrong, mm-hmm. does not mean she's going to lose the election.
Right.
Does not mean that at all. It just means we're not going to know as soon.
Right.
Right. It's going to take a few hours for us to really see then where it's going. Now, let's say it is going the way that I think it's going to go, and the early votes start coming in, and typically Democrats do really well with the early votes, whatever, and then the same day votes start coming in and all that stuff. If Trump and VP Harris are pretty close, he may be ahead, she may be ahead, it doesn't matter, but if they're pretty close and it's like that until all the votes are counted, and let's say, she comes out by half a point or a point or whatever, game over. She's mm-hmm. going to win the election. If Florida flips on election night, she is the next president of the United States. I will call it right then and there if Florida flips, because North Carolina is going to flip. Georgia is going to flip. More than likely, Ohio and Iowa are going to flip. Pennsylvania will be close, but eventually she'll win that. All these states that we've been kind of like, they're going to go towards her. I'm telling you now, Florida's going to be the litmus test. Now, if Donald Trump wins Florida, mm-hmm. but still wins it by, let's say, half a point or a point or so, like in 2016, it's going to be a longer night, mm-hmm. once again, but I do think overall she pulls it out. But Florida, for me, will be the litmus test for does she just win? Is it going to be a landslide in terms of her winning, or even a possibly, I could be completely wrong and he ends up winning? Because mm-hmm. now let's say if he wins Florida by 5-6 points, something insane like that, then I'm going to start worrying about these neighboring states like Georgia, mm-hmm. like North Carolina. What is that going to look like?
Right.
So yeah, for me, Florida is the litmus test.
Okay. Now, obviously you're talking about how people are going to vote. And my question is not that. My question is, let's say there's a fairly slim margin, right? But Democrats win Georgia, but it's a slim margin, and you've got this fuckery going on with the election deniers refusing to certify the election. How are you processing this? Like, what do you think about that? Where are you in that? I mean, I understand Mark Elias, who is the lawyer who has been fighting all of these election, contested election stuff. He's been winning for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we're, from what I understand, this is not my area of expertise at all, but I do know people are working hard on it, but like, where are you on this?
Okay. So first off, for your listeners, they're going to contest the election. They're mm-hmm. going to contest the results in a lot of different states. It's going to happen. I don't care if VP Harris wins by 500 votes or mm-hmm. 500,000 votes, they're going to do it. So that's the first thing. So just prepare yourselves mm-hmm. for this. It's going to happen. Secondly, I do think Democrats have done an excellent job at pushing back at this and winning in court. So I'm not so concerned about it as much as others, because I do think Democrats are prepared for this. They mm-hmm. know what they're up to. So I think Democrats are fine there. But thirdly, and it's going back to Florida just a bit here, because this is also tied into your question. Running up the score is very important in this election. And I agree with Michelle Obama when she's like, look, we got to run it up. We got to run mm-hmm. up the numbers. we have to run up the score in this election. Mm-hmm. And Florida's a part of this. Now, I've seen folks on the Hellscape, as we know as Twitter, say stuff like, oh, money should be invested other places, ignore Florida, Florida's not in play. And I would like to respectfully tell those people to shut the hell up. Mm-hmm. Now, and here's the reason why I'm saying this. The Senate is going to be extremely close, mm-hmm. and Democrats need that Senate seat out of Florida. And Rick Scott is extremely vulnerable, and I do believe Debbie will be able to flip that seat. But you can't flip seats if you don't have resources. You can't flip seats mm-hmm. if you don't have people out there volunteering. So where people are thinking about just the top of the ticket, they're not thinking about down ballot and why it's important to get people energized and to get those resources into the state. Now, the other thing is we saw what happened in 2022 with the bottom falling. I mean, it was terrible of just falling out in Florida in regards to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. They did terribly in Florida. Mm-hmm. We saw it happen. And it's one of the reasons why we were not able to hold the House. So Democrats in Florida under Nikki Fried, they're challenging every single seat, whether it's in, yes, they're challenging every seat. This is the first time in a very long time they've done this. So there's a possibility here that we can flip seats and make once again, running up the score mm-hmm. and hopefully gaining 15, maybe even 30 seats there in the House. Yeah. So it's important. Florida is extremely important in this cycle. But I do think no matter what happens, whether it's in Florida, whether it's in Georgia, whether it's in Arizona, it doesn't matter. They're going to challenge the results of this election.
Oh, I know. And it's just going to be really... That's why we need to have such big numbers, because then when they do contest it, it's going to be harder to justify if you've got exactly. this massive number of Democrats voting compared to Republicans or, you know, for Democrats, then it's just, you know, courts aren't even going to take it. We know that a lot of these judges who have thrown out some of this stuff have been Trump appointed. So it doesn't right. mean just because it's a Trump appointed judge, it's all, automatically. But if it does go to the Supreme Court, I don't trust it at all. I want to read this. I thought this was interesting. I don't know if you saw it, but he's a professor. It's a historian. His name is Aaron Astor. He said, enthusiastic votes are as good as unenthusiastic votes, but Dems being as enthusiastic as in 2008 probably means a lot of community spillover to friends, neighbors, and family who might otherwise have tuned out. And then Ari, more enthusiastic was just 39%. In 2016, and it's now 78% for Harris. So there's that. Now what I want to ask you and what I want to talk about is how, you know, we know there's a problem with our corporate media, and mm-hmm. they've been criticizing Harris for not sitting down for an interview. So now she's decided, okay, I will sit down with my VP, and what are they doing? They're coming after her and saying, oh my God, she is so incapable of doing this that she has to bring her VP, which of course everybody in their first sit down interview running for president brings their VP candidate. So, I guess my question to you about this is, it seems like it's unbelievable to me. She's got all of this momentum. She's got all of this popularity. And then she's got to go against not only Republicans and then, you know, the billionaires like Harlan Crow and all of that, and the Supreme Court that we can't necessarily trust. But we've got this news media that is not really, I mean, they are just basically giving Donald Trump a pass because either they're afraid of what might happen if he wins, or if they've just written him off because he's so criminal and so corrupt that we're not even going to worry about him. All they do is nitpick and attack Democrats. I mean, there was this guy, I think it was the Free Beacon, and I think that's what it is, and he did this whole article on how, oh my God, Kamala Harris didn't put McDonald's down on a resume. What is she hiding? The stupidest crap. And so it's like, how much, I guess my question here is, because it's like we the people, right? Seems like we the people are all kind of behind Harris for the most part. obviously there's people who won't vote for her, but you know what I'm talking about. And then there's everything else. And they are kind of trying to, whether they're actively trying to hurt her or question her, it's like, we're going against the media. We're going against the Republicans. We're going against Supreme Court. And so with all of this, I know you think she's going to win, but like, how did they come into play, and how much can they hurt what's happening?
Well, good question again. when it comes to the media, I have been vocal about this, and I do believe the media was partially responsible for Donald Trump winning in 2016. We can even argue that if it were not for the media, he probably would not have won. But that's another debate. Mm-hmm. We saw what the media did to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. We all admit that, you know, he didn't have his best debate, but the media was able to take that and turn it into something, I think, you know, make it appear like it was a lot more serious than it was. Because as you pointed out, although Biden did pause, he did have moments there. He had a firm grasp of the facts. Mm-hmm. He was able to, answer questions in a cohesive manner, whereas Trump was rambling. The media focused on Biden paused and focused on the quote-unquote cognitive decline that's clearly not really there, and completely ignored the fact that this man has been rambling. Even if we take that debate, one of the first questions would have should have been, you were convicted on 34 counts. Why should the American people vote for you? We have not heard that. We haven't even heard that question from any interviewer, right, that not that I've seen, and not any debate. So when it comes to VP Harris, I think they are handling the media the way they should handle the media, like they're hostile. We saw with the convention, they gave the influencers and things like, you know, folks like that, access, and they gave them accommodations and things like that than some of the legacy media, and they were not happy about that.
No,
they've been very selective with who they, you know, choose to speak to, and they have not been happy about that as well, because VP Harris observed what they did to Biden, and she observed what they did to Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And they will try to do the same thing, and they have been trying to do the same thing to her. Just quick examples, you've seen this now brouhaha over her sitting down with Tim Walz and doing the CNN interview, which is tonight. Hello, every single one of them have done this.
Everyone. There's photographs circulating the internet with every single president sitting down with their VP. And it's just, it's so ridiculous to see this. And it's upsetting to me, because obviously, I mean, this is something that we're supposed to have this, press that just gives us the facts, but we've moved into entertainment corporate media. And again, I don't know if it's solely about making money, or if some of them are freaked out and they think, well, if Trump wins, you know, we have to make sure that he's not going to come after us. I don't know. I don't know what their reasoning is, but it's extreme. Say that. What?
I do. No, they've made a lot of money off of
there
Trump.
There you go.
And a money. Lot of careers were saved because of the Trump presidency. This is not an opinion. This is fact. A lot of books were written. Mm-hmm. There was the good old days of writing full articles off of a tweet, where you didn't have to do much journalism.
Yeah, that's really sad.
I mean, think
sad.
About it.
It's really so, true and sad.
No, it is sad, but and I'm speaking for myself, not speaking for you when I say this. I just want to make that disclaimer. When you look at Katie Turr, for example, her career exploded after, you know, her coverage of Donald Trump and him becoming president of the United States. No one knew who Katie Turr was before Donald Trump. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of careers that were either resurrected or jump started because of that. And he made those networks a lot of money, because people were just like, what is he going to do next? And they were glued to cable. TV, you know, in terms of the news, cable TV news. They were glued to the articles that were coming out because they were just like, oh my God, what did he do now? So they missed that. Biden is boring. You know, that's the way the presidency is supposed to be. But yeah, they want to bring the good old days back.
Oh, it's so incredibly frustrating. But okay, so now let's just talk about Trump a little bit. Sure. Now, he's got sentencing coming up next, when is it? Not next week, but the week after. So it's supposed to be September 10th. Unless, or wait, is that the debate? I don't even remember.
No, it's. I think it's like this. It's somewhere around there. I want to say it's, I can't remember the exact date, but you're correct. It's,
right.
It's like, like 2 weeks or so from now.
And then, okay, so we're going to have sentencing and we're going to have a debate real close to each other.
Yes.
Now, as far as the debate is concerned, it is my prediction he is not going to chicken out of this, because if he does, he'll just be hounded by the internet calling him a chicken. He can't. He's just way too much of a narcissist to have that happen. And I mean, I think you and I probably agree in the idea that she's going to win the debate, but I think that, and I think a lot of people would agree, she would win the debate. But it's not about debates. Don't determine who's going to be the president. Do you have any prediction on how she will handle him? I don't know. We don't know yet. I don't think what the moderators are going to do, how they're going to handle Donald. Do you think that he's just going to revert to slurs? Do you think he's, I mean, I would assume he is going to do what we've seen him do, like at the last, the 2020 debate with Joe Biden. I think he's going to come off as unhinged. I mean, I can't imagine he won't come off as unhinged. And like, how do you think, do you expect her to be the person we saw grilling, you know, Bill Barr? I mean, she may not have the same kind of, I mean, the rules are probably going to be different than a Senate hearing, but like, is that what you're envisioning? Like, she's just going to basically be that version of herself?
Because she has to walk a thin, line, right? You know, because if she's too aggressive, then they'll try to label her the angry black woman and things like that. And if she's too passive, she's not strong enough to be president of the United States. So she has to walk a very thin line here. But I think she can do it. So I believe that we're going to see a bit of the Senate, hearing Kamala Harris. I think she's going to be forceful. I think she's going to be presidential. But at the same time, I think she's going to, you know, like if he says something just crazy, she's going to fact check him in real time, and she's able to do that and then get her point across. That was something Biden unfortunately was unable to do, because let's just be honest, like you said, you know, he's getting up there in age. He was a little knocked off his game.
It was off night.
Sick with. So he was unable to fact check him in real time, because Trump was just rapid fire with with the lies. And let's call them what they are. They're lies. I believe she is I'm hoping that she is preparing, you know, to be able to fact check him in real time and deal with those rapid fire lies, but at the same time to, you know, get her points across and let the American people know what, you know, her vision for where this country should go. She can't spend her entire time just fact-checking his BS. But I do think he's going to unravel.
I think he will.
He's going to unravel because he does not like women.
No.
He doesn't. And she's a black woman. And as you pointed out, he's been going through some things recently at the hands of black women. He really has been. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
So I believe she's going to trigger him. It's probably the main reason why her campaign, the Harris-Walz campaign, don't want mics muted. Because while she's talking, he's more than likely going to be rambling to himself. He's going to be making comments to himself. And they want to get a hot mic. You know, they want to get him saying crazy stuff. So, I think she'll do fine. I always, when we go into these debates, even with Hillary Clinton, I still am cautiously optimistic because, you know, you just never know. And we saw with Biden, right? These things sometimes don't go the way that you expect. Yeah. But I do think, she'll do well.
Well, and she also has the benefit of, even though he was a little bit more there with his brain and his thoughts back in 2016, when he was, you know, debating Hillary, he was stalking her on stage. And, you know, and we've talked about this on the show before, but, you know, Hillary, I'm never going to fault her for her choice not to scold him. And as much as she regrets it, and all the women in America wish she would have spoken up at that time, that had never happened before. And we were in, you know, uncharted territory. I mean, this is like this has all been uncharted, right? And so she was in that moment and she had to make this decision in a few seconds. And I think, you know, God only knows exactly what her thought process was, but I'm just going to go ahead and assume, and I know she's talked about it, but, you know, she just decided, okay, well, I'm not going to give in to this, because if I do, then, you know, it may look like I'm some kind of a victim or something like that. So she chose to just ignore it. I think Kamala Harris is the beneficiary of that, you know, moment where she can look at that moment and say, I mean, I don't think Trump will do that to her. I think what he will do is talk about, can you believe this? Can you believe her? What a nasty, what a terrible woman. I mean, I think he's going to, anytime she gets something right, he's going to resort into, can you believe this nasty woman type thing? I think that's where he'll go. And I mean, I don't know exactly, I'm sure she's preparing for it, but I think the debate will be fascinating, of course. But I mean, that debate with Joe Biden, you know, and Hillary Clinton won her debates, but lost the election. Joe Biden did win the debate and then he won the election. So I'm not worried about this debate and thinking that it's going to have the hugest impact. But I will say this though, I think we're going to have a huge audience for this.
It's probably going to be the largest in terms, rating wise. And I will say this, when Biden was in the election, whether you agree with it or not, he was viewed as the older one, which he is, but they're essentially the same age. That's right. Optically, I still think Biden looks better optically. Yeah. I know what you're talking about in terms of like the slowness and things like that. But when I saw Biden at the DNC, he was glowing. He was looking great.
Yeah.
He really was. I was like, my goodness, what did they give this guy? Because he was glowing. What is going on? So now with Trump and VP Harris, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully here because I don't want to sound ageist or anything like that, but optics, they matter.
They do.
And optically, he's going to look ancient next to VP Harris. I'm sorry, he is.
He will.
He's going to look ancient. There's not going to be enough makeup in the world that's going to, you know, it's so. So here's the thing, and I'm careful here because I don't want to offend folks. When he was debating against Hillary Clinton. Once again, still an older woman, a woman, so it was still, you know, two older folks.
Right.
And I'm being careful here, and I don't want to offend your, you know, listeners. Him against Biden, same thing, you know, older folks or whatever. So optically, it was still kind of the same.
Yeah.
This time, it's going to be really stark. It really is. It's going to be him and we know it, especially when he starts to go into meltdown mode and her, so that's going to be the very first thing people are going to notice. Yeah. that split screen, they're gonna be like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get into the debate. I think she's going to do fine.
Well, I just want to say, as far as the ageism thing, I mean, you're not being ageist. I think what you're doing is the same thing that we were projecting onto Kamala Harris. Like, is America, can we trust Americans to do the right thing and vote for the good person, as opposed to, you know, oh, it's a black woman and, you know, America isn't ready for a black woman and all that crap. I mean, that's what I was afraid of. I was never afraid of her. I always felt that she could do a fantastic job. And now that, I mean, now that the campaign is going the way it is, I mean, I have even more faith and I trust her even more, because it's like, and it's not even about her. It's about the reaction to her. And so what we're talking about here is the reaction. And the truth is, there's, you know, a lot of young people, and I'm talking young, 22, 23 years old, they're looking at Donald Trump and that's what they see. And while, you know, Hillary Clinton and people like, whether you like them or not, Bernie Sanders, and even Joe Biden, these people are old, but they're extremely capable. And what they have to bring to the table is incredibly valuable. But we live in a country that is very, very focused on appearance and what things look like. And so since that's our reality right now, that is the reality we're facing. And fortunately, we have the advantage. And we have the advantage of a younger... And then on top of everything, it's driving him fucking crazy that she's being referred to as beautiful. And, you know, he keeps going out there and you know, while he's talking about the late, great Hannibal Lecter and the sharks and the batteries, he's like, I'm better looking than Kamala. And, you know, and people say that I was good looking before. Am I good looking now? And he's going on and on and on about his looks. And it's like, because she is very good looking and he's, you know, she's freaking beautiful. And she's so smart and she's so capable. And I mean, it's just this, it's more than a trifecta. She's got everything going for her. And the funny thing is, it's like the laugh. It, you know, you said, you know, she can't, you know, Barack Obama had the same problem. You have to be very careful as a black person because you don't want to be labeled as the angry black person. And it's like, so, okay, she's not the angry black person because she laughs too much. It's like, right. She's too goddamn happy. And, you know, it's she's like nothing, happy. Nothing she can do. She's going to get all this criticism based on sexism, misogyny and, you know, racism and all of it. And we know that. But I just want to go to your point that I know where you're coming from. It's just, you know, we've got an American electorate who is, a lot of us, you know, can be, whether it's ageist or sexist or whatever. And that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at the through the lens of the American public as opposed to what you're seeing. But yeah, the two of them, like you said, it's going to be a very stark difference. I do want to quickly touch on, though, you told Bob and, you know, you put Texas in the pink column. You don't have a lot of faith in Colin Allred. But what I want to add, and I want you to talk about why, but and he's running against Ted Cruz, right? Am I getting these names right? Isn't it Colin Allred?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's Ted Cruz, correct.
Okay, so, and obviously Ted Cruz has, I don't know, how many times has he won? Twice? I don't know. He's such a fucking asshole. Nobody likes him. And I mean, you know, I mean, it's like comical how much of an asshole he is, but he keeps winning. And the Senate is not gerrymandered, so there's voter suppression, yes, but there's no gerrymandering when it comes to him winning. In this particular election, even though, in your opinion, and I'm not fighting you on this, but Colin Allred is not the best candidate, do you think that there is a chance he could pull it off because of this enthusiasm gap and because of what's happening? Or do you just say, no, it's not going to happen?
Well, look, there's always a possibility, right? So back in 2023, I wanted Representative Crockett, you know.
Yes, I know.
Over and over again. And people were like, oh, they didn't know who she was. Oh, no, she can't, you know, no, never, blah, 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 blah. And then now, because she's probably one of the top five mm-hmm. Democrats in terms of popularity right now, folks are like, oh man, uh-huh. You know, maybe she should have ran. Yeah, really? Colin, or I know your question is about Colin. Mm-hmm. He sucks. I'm sorry. I'm just going to, I always tell you, I'm going to, you know, keep it real with you. Mm-hmm. He sucks as a candidate. He sucks. He's one of the worst candidates I've seen in a very long time. Wow. I'm going to be honest with you. If he was a better candidate, he would be running away with this because of her coattails. So why is he a bad candidate? First, go look at his ads. You know, if your listeners, when you have a moment, go look at his ads. That's the first thing. Secondly, he's trying to distance himself even right now, he was trying to distance himself from the Biden administration, and now he's trying to distance himself from the person who is right now the hottest and the, you know, the most popular Democrat right now, which is VP Harris. Mm-hmm. She's on fire right now. Mm-hmm. She's raising a lot of money. People are just going crazy over her. Do you think he, on his knees begging her to come to Texas? Can we do a rally together? Is he calling Representative Crockett and saying, hey, let's do something throughout the state together because they're both from the same state. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. No, that's not happening either. He's not, I hate saying this, but he's not even going to the neighborhoods where he needs to go. You know, he's not coming to the black neighborhoods and talking to the way that he should be doing mm-hmm. it. And there are a lot of folks who are like, who? You know, like, who's this? So he's going off. He used to play football, and he's going off of the fact that he thinks because he used to play football that he could just ride on that and, mm-hmm. and get across the finish line. So unless, you know, Trump is sentenced to prison in the next few weeks or home confinement or something catastrophic happens where it really shakes this up, I would be surprised if he pulls it off. I would be surprised if Texas flipped. I mean, really and truly, I just don't see it happening, but anything is possible.
Yeah. So you do think, though, if he gets even home confinement, that could push Colin over the edge to beat...
I think if he gets home confinement, I think that changes the election dramatically. And at that point, I'm just throwing out everything and just say, hey, guys, let's just wait and see what happens in a few weeks. Because here, and I've been saying this for quite some time, and this is the other reason why I feel that not only Florida's flipping, but North Carolina flipping and so a few other, you know, states can possibly get closer than in 2020. Here's the reason why. The media has done, and here we go again with the media. The mm-hmm. media has done an excellent job of gaslighting folks and making folks forget about things that just recently happened. This man was convicted on 34 counts. This is significant. It's significant. And we don't talk about it. The media has just gone on like it's just another day in America.
Right.
And he's just like a, you know, typical normal candidate. I do think there are voters who are thinking about that, and they're saying, I just can't vote for this man. He's a convicted felon, and I'm talking about Republicans. Mm-hmm. I do think there are a significant number of Republicans that are just like, I just can't. This man is a convicted felon. And that's going to come back around again with this sentencing, whether mm-hmm. he's sentenced to home confinement or he's sentenced to some type of jail or community service, it doesn't matter. It's going to bring it back to the forefront again.
Yeah.
Then the other thing, him being quote-unquote shot in the air, it's just so weird. You know, it's so weird. Like, what is happening here?
Know.
You know, what is going on, seriously, with our media?
Yeah.
This man is now walking around, you know, with his air out and everything, and it's completely fine. There's no hint of any injury, past or present, in this man's ear.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe the media has done a great job of gaslighting us and making us forget things. And I do believe that this conviction and then him possibly being, you know, sentenced to whatever it may be will affect the election. And if he is sent to home confinement, even if it's for 3 months or 4 months, I do think there are going to be folks that are going to be like, enough is enough.
Wow. And that makes sense because there are Trump supporters and Trump voters. Trump voters are different. The supporters are the real whack, real like QAnon wackadoodle, nincompoop is the word that you are so fond of using, and I just love that word. But I think, you know, and then there's the Trump voters, and it's like you said, they're just like the Republicans who go along with what the party is doing. And at some point, I mean, again, we're seeing all of these Reagan Republicans breaking away, and we're seeing evangelicals for Harris. We're seeing this crazy, just like, you know, I mean, it's crazy momentum that we've never seen before. And like you said, Barack Obama was a different time. We weren't dealing with a Donald Trump. We weren't dealing with potential fascism. I mean, we had the normal Republican fuckery, but this is a whole new ballgame. And so and the excitement for her is also, I think it's because she's a woman too. You know, it's like the whole glass ceiling thing. So he had the black man thing, but she's got the black woman thing. And it's even, you know, more difficult for women of color. You know, Michelle Obama said it so well about, you know, what did she say? We don't fall up. Or, you know, I can't remember the term that she used,
basically falling up.
Yeah, we don't get that advantage. We don't get the advantage of generational wealth. So, you know, and
failing up.
That's right. So, and she's absolutely right about that. So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but the last question I want to ask you, because you mentioned you're going to do one more map in October. So can you just kind of tell us, and you said after the October map that you think that's just pretty much going to settle into the map. So tell us I know you've already talked about what you're gauging, but like what's all going to determine what goes into that last map that you do?
Well, so because there was a reset, right? And now there's a new candidate and she has a ton of momentum. I'm looking at first thing, is this momentum going to increase? Is it going to kind of taper, you know, off? What's going to happen with this momentum? What's going to happen with this enthusiasm, excitement? What's going to happen with the registration? Because folks are going to be still registering. The cutoff time for states are different. You know, we're going to see still an increase in people registering to vote and volunteer in September. What does that look like? You said something about, you know, this enthusiasm and people, it's, you know, it becoming infectious. And I talked about that on Sunday. I talked about the DNC, how the DNC was a super spreader event. I wasn't talking about, right. I wasn't talking about COVID at the time, but apparently with COVID as well. But what I was talking about, a super spreader event in terms of the enthusiasm and the joy that, you know, they're saying that joy is not a strategy. It is a strategy. Mm-hmm. So people are they're enthusiastic. They're happy. They're just excited. So they're taking that back home. They're taking it back home to their states, their districts, their neighborhoods. They're telling their friends and family, you know, they're getting them excited about it. People, you know, they want to volunteer. They are your best weapon when it comes to an election. And that's what's happening now. So I need to see what that looks like in the next few weeks. Because when you take that joy and that excitement and you take somebody who may not, you know, they were probably more than likely not going to vote. They were probably like, man, I'm just going to stay home. I don't want to vote. Now they're excited. They're like, okay, I want to be part of this.
Yeah.
Fear of missing out.
Yes.
Fear of missing out is a significant, it's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's going to be a lot of fear of missing out. There are going to be folks that are going to want to say, I voted for the first female black president.
Yeah. I mean, in 2008, I remember I lived in California, so it was pretty much a done deal that Barack Obama was going to win California. But I remember I had like a backache. I was out of work and I had a backache for 6 weeks. And on voting day, it was raining. And I was like, I'm not missing it. I went out in the rain with my cane and I stood there. It didn't take too long, but still, I just didn't care. I wanted to cast my vote for Barack Obama. So I believe you're right about that. We're going to have that enthusiasm, the fear of missing out. And I'm really looking forward to that map in October. It'll be interesting to see. Like I said, you've got Democrats winning the electoral right now. Your prediction is 349. Barack Obama won in 2008 with 365. So I think it would be super fantastic if we could get 365 and above. I'll be happy with 349. I'll be happy with 330. But I think that it's most important we get what appears to be a mandate, because the only way Trumpism is going to go away, it's never going to fully go away, but it's just like, you know, I like to call it the before times, where racism and the sexism and all of it, it was always there, but people understood they couldn't do it in public. Now they're like, we're going to do it in public. And so I'd like to just see that kind of go back to the way it was, where we're just, it's not acceptable anymore. And I think that if we have a mandate, it will help create that kind of an atmosphere. And it's not going to happen overnight. We're still, like you predicted and you said, save this tweet. You think Democrats are going to hold the Senate by like what, 51, did you say?
Well, you know, obviously it depends what happens in Florida.
Right.
It depends on what happens in Montana with Tesla. But yes, I do think it's going to be 50 to 51. If I'm wrong about Texas with Colin already, and he somehow pulls off a miracle, then we'll be at 52-ish.
Oh, my God, that would be great.
52, but just,
I know.
You know, I would just say hope for 51.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I'll be inviting you back before the election because even though everything has changed for the better and I feel so much more optimistic and hopeful. And I felt pretty optimistic with Joe Biden when everybody was slamming on him. But with Kamala Harris, it's a whole new level of optimism. I'm still going to be freaking out on election night. I will be closely watching Florida because of your advice. But I know that it's going to be difficult for me because I just remember assuming Hillary Clinton was going to win in 2016. And, you know, I remember that night so well. I took a shower. I cut my own hair that night, which I do from time to time in between haircuts, but it was like, I refreshed up my hair and I felt all pretty and I was so excited. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to watch the first woman become president. And then the worst possible thing happened, you know, and it was just fucking awful. So I still carry that with me, that memory, but I hopefully, like you said, hopefully if Florida is quickly going to count their votes, we'll know pretty soon. And I'm with you. If Florida goes to her, I think that's it for Trump. I think he's done and he's toast. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I always love talking to you so much. I so much enjoy your tweets. I love your sarcasm. I love it so much. You don't even know. So it's like, thank you for being you, because you help me. I know you help other people with everything that you do and say. And I appreciate your analysis too. So of course, I'm going to say, I always say this, but tell everyone where to find you.
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on my platform, spotable.com/CBoozy. You can find me on the Hellscape, also known as Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it. It's CBoozy as well. And also on Instagram, CBoozy, and that's CBOUZY.
Awesome. Well, CBoozy, it was just fantastic talking to you, and I know I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Bye-bye.